Wonderful finger snapping for Patty H.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Patty Hicks, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
And I'd like to thank Riley for giving you 60 seconds about me and then his story. I've said more about me and my prayers in 10 minutes than he managed. I have the cigarette holder. I don't know where my martini is. This has been a wonderful, wonderful weekend for me. It really has. I've enjoyed the speakers I've heard. I'm so glad I came to Dallas to hear Marie. I was hoping to try to start a controversy of some kind tonight, but Riley took care of it at his workshop the other day. There's practically nothing left to do. I would like to especially thank the committee for inviting me here, and until he said what he said when he stood up here to get his round of applause, I was going to thank Jack Cleary. I would like the signer to get this right. Jack Cleary. Spell it for them. One of the girls that I sponsor was at a meeting where they had a signer, and she said, it was funnier to watch him than me, because she said he kept going. They've asked me here tonight, I believe, to tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. General to most of you is a little sleazy to me. I would like to clarify, though, Riley did tell you I am straight. I am not, as the rumor has gone around here tonight, a member of the new cast of La Cage. In my case, what you see is what you get. I'm from New England, and I was brought up to be a lady, and when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was sure I was a lady drunk. I know there's some identification there. I thought I was the first one that had ever arrived. My goal in life was to drink like a man and act like a lady. I found out there's no such thing as a lady drunk. The two words don't go together. You're one or the other. I was brought up in New England. I was brought up with non-alcoholic parents. Nobody drank in my family. Nobody smoked in my family. No one said doo-doo in my family. I'm going to take him back to Los Angeles with me. I have a brother who has never had a drink, a pill, a fix, a snort, nothing in his entire life. one of the most boring people you have ever met. However, he's a lady. To the right schools and had the right tap dancing lessons, wore the little right white gloves and the little right mink jacket, and there was no reason for me to become an alcoholic. What happened was I drank. And I loved it. So I drank lots. And despite what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous said, as Riley told you tonight, I did not cross over that line quickly. I started drinking when I was 14 years old. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 34 years old. I'm going to try to get this right. By the grace of God, the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, all my friends in Los Angeles, Toronto, Delaware, California, Massachusetts, and especially Dallas, I have been sober this time since July 24th, 1972. That means that I have been sober for 13 years, which means that I am 47 years old tonight and looking good. And you know what? I never had it so good as in the last 13 years of my life. I have a couple of other problems besides drinking. I don't identify myself as an alcoholic and anything. I'm just an alcoholic because this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I told you I drank for 20 years. I only took drugs for 15 years. It's hardly worth mentioning. I took drugs to function and to maintain and to get well enough to drink again. All of your other speakers this weekend have told you the same thing. It's all the same. And I hope we can stop trying to make ourselves different. You know, I want Alcoholics Anonymous for me. I'm real selfish. I want this program to stay as it was when I found it. I need it to stay because I need to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't need all these specialty things. In Los Angeles, we've gotten really wild. You know, maybe you haven't got into this yet. We have CA for cocaine addicts only. You know, we have all these offshoots so that we can remain different. We've gotten so bonkers there that we now have Impotence Anonymous. I want to go to one of their meetings and hear them play Can You Bottom This? Yeah. I called Riley the other day. You know, and I said, I wonder at the end of the meeting, instead of saying keep coming back, they must just say keep coming. Oh, well. Enough about them. I have another couple of problems. I thought I was going to be 19 forever. I just thought the party was never going to end. Because when I was 19, I'd been drinking for 5 years. I had become a widow once because the first time I married a gangster, God, that was exciting at brief. he stuck around long enough before the cops shot him for me to have a daughter. I dragged her through most of my alcoholism with me. I had divorced my second husband. Oh, I marry everyone, too, you might have noticed. Well, I'm from New England. I'm a nice girl. We don't mess around. Unless we happen to be between husbands. I've just told you one of my secrets that no one was ever going to know about. I didn't think any of the rest of you slept around. And I was 19 and I divorced my second husband because I married him for his money. It didn't work out. I didn't get the money. And I was living in New York and I was modeling and I was making lots of money and I had the right clothes and the right furs and the right men and the right jewels and the right booze and the right everything. And life was marvelous and I was standing at the top of the sixes one day. And I was thinking of throwing myself out and wondering if I could land with my face up so my makeup would be intact. I never commit suicide unless I think I'm looking good, you know? I committed suicide a long time. I finally got bored with it because I was getting blood all over me, you know? And it's messy, and then I realized one time, you know, I could die from this. And I quit that, you know. Anyway, the other problem I had, I've just told you, I married everyone. I came to California because I ran out of the East Coast. I was in Florida and I was modeling and I met a gangster from Brooklyn who talked out of the side of his mouth. He was fabulous. And he was about 4'11 and he weighed about 90 pounds. In the right places. And he owned a bar and he was a pimp. I mean, it was a match made in heaven. And we left Florida because we were on the wrong side of the Cuban Revolution, and the diamonds he was dealing to doctors turned out not to be diamonds, and the mafia was kind of, everybody was after us, and his wife was getting sore about everything. Now, you know, I've just admitted that I did, in my time, date a few married men, but, you know, I got used to being married, and after a while, you know, you just have to have a husband around, and you really don't care whose it is, you know? But I have a certain code of ethics. When I date married men, I only date the ones that are terribly unhappy at home. I only date the ones whose wives are insane or on the verge. I only date the ones who, of course, haven't had sex with these women for many years. Every once in a while, one of them would get pregnant, and I never figured it out. And sometimes I would ask when they were going to leave said wife. And they would tell me as soon as the children were grown. The children were 42, 46, and 49. And I took my little daughter and I dragged her up and down the East Coast with me, and we finally came out to California. And I was 23 years old and I was a has-been. My face was red and my eyes were yellow and the booze was taking its toll on me. I was puffy and I was beginning, I just couldn't model anymore. I just didn't have what it took at 23 years old. And it was over, and I didn't know it was over because that's when I had crossed, I guess, the invisible line. Alcohol was no longer working for me. I was powerless over it, and it became my medicine. It wasn't fun anymore. It wasn't party time anymore. It's what let me sleep. You remember sleeping? That's what you did for 3 hours at a time. And it made the pain go away. Until the pain became too great, and it made the hurt go away, you know, and it was my medicine, it was my best friend, and then it finally turned on me, and I was powerless over it. And the last 2 years are 2 years that I will never forget, nor do I ever want to forget, because I have been told that if I ever forget that, I may have to go back and do it again, and I can't do it again. I just can't do it again. I'm not afraid of dying drunk. I'm not afraid of that. I tried to die drunk, didn't you? I'm afraid I could go out there and live and remember the night that I stood at this podium and tried to give you some hope so that you would stay. and I'd remember every moment of it as I was one more time lifting some of that poison to my mouth. Anyway, I came to California, and I said to my daughter, we'll never get married again. That was between number two and number three husband. Number three, I found in a nice area of Beverly Hills, because when I go husband hunting, I do like to go to the best areas, you know. And we have an area in California called Beverly Hills. So I moved to Beverly Hills, and I got employment in Beverly Hills, and I put my daughter in a private school in Beverly Hills, and I had the right address to write home to Daddy. And we had a wonderful place we lived in. It had a refrigerator with a bottle of milk and a bottle of vodka in it. And you see, because I didn't drink scotch anymore, because I was drinking vodka now because it left me breathless. And I went out husband hunting. Well, I wasn't there 5 minutes when he drove up. Naturally. I mean, I didn't hardly be planted on that bar stool, you know. And an MG drove up with the top down, and the most gorgeous thing. Unraveled, 6'4", black hair, black mustache to die for. You know what I mean? A custom-made suit. He walked into that bar. He threw a $20 bill down on the bar. He had a diamond pinky ring. I checked out all the important things, his wrist, his Adam's apple, his shoe size. And, and he said to the bartender, I'll have a double Jack Daniels. I thought, my God, he drinks like I drink. I married him so fast I couldn't even spell his last name. The sheriff could. The sheriff put it on the bottom of a warrant and came and collected my brand new husband and took him away for 13 weekends. It was not the funnest honeymoon I've ever had. Now, this guy was not what I expected. I wanted a CPA or a judge from Beverly Hills. It seems he was a sheep herder from Montana. He didn't make the kind of money that I needed. What he did was pump gas, and he did not own the well it came from. He pumped it with a uniform on for minimum wage, you know, when he showed up. But I didn't care because you know how it is. When they look good, you just know you can take them anywhere if they just don't open their mouths, you know. I knew it was going to be all right. And the MG was repossessed, and the diamond pinky ring went to pay for the attorney, Harry, the same one Riley had. And the suit was all the clothes he owned. But it was all right because he looked good. What I did not like, I mean, I don't mind how much you lie to me about things like that are not important. The lie of omission was he did not drink Jack Daniels. He drank beer. Now, I know there probably are one or two beer drinkers here tonight, and I will probably offend you with my next statement. But this is my story, and you've paid for the banquet, so you're going to have to listen to it. I think beer is tacky. I mean, I ask you, have you ever seen a woman like me standing here with a cigarette holder in one hand, dressed like this, with furs and jewels, and a can of Coors in the hand? Ever. You know. That I knew it was tacky. And so I told him I didn't drink beer, and he was from Montana, and he drank a six-pack right in front of me. And I got thirsty. And so I said, unless there's nothing else around. And you know, for 2 years, I drank beer with this pig. He just kept getting taller and better looking, you know. And I went from a size 5 to a calf tan, and then been a moo-moo. I don't even like to say this out loud, but it was polyester. Now, for you beer drinkers, if you resent me saying that I think beer is tacky, and you're going to leave here tonight, and you're going to go home, and about 3 o'clock in the morning sit straight up in your bed and say, who does that bitch think she is? We've invited her here, we've paid her expenses, and she's telling us it's tacky, you know? What's going to happen is I would suggest you call your sponsor. I'll wake the sucker up at 3 o'clock. That's why he's your sponsor. That's what he's not paid for. And say to him, I can't sleep. I've just come from the roundup, and that woman said beer is tacky. And you know I'm a beer drinker, and I've just come to the belief that it's even alcohol. You know. And your sponsor will say to you, in the most learned tone, I would suggest that instead of staying awake, you open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you turn to the chapter Freedom from Bondage, and you read what to do about a resentment, even if it's justified. And the book will tell you, as it does in all the black print, precisely what to do. It will say, you'll have to pray for her. And next week, I'll be back in my little Betty Bye in L.A. And you'll be praying for me night after night after night. I stayed married to this guy for 2 years. I stayed married to him for about 2 years longer than he wanted to be married to me. And he kind of ran out of patience with the way I looked and how fat and bloated I was getting. And I decided maybe if we got pregnant, everything would be all right. And we had a baby and she died and everything wasn't all right. And now I was, you know, bloated from drinking all this beer. I was fat from being pregnant. And one night he decided we'd have a fire. He didn't mention we were having one. He threw a match in and left. So now, my hair was all burned off, my face was all scarred, I was fat from being pregnant, I was bloated from drinking all this beer, my eyes were yellow, my face was red, and I was called back east because my daddy was dying. And I was never going to go back there till I could show them. I was going to be on the cover of Vogue or Harper's Bazaar. I fell off the plane fat, bloated, bald. Drunk out of my mind, loaded on pills, and I didn't show them a goddamn thing. And 6 weeks later, my daddy died, and my daddy loved me the way only a parent can love a child, and my daddy thought I could do no wrong, and I loved my daddy, and it was my link, you know. And I went back to California, and can you believe that son of a bitch was cheating on me? I mean, just because I was fat and bloated and bald was no reason for him to be with someone else. And I said what any self-respecting alcoholic would say, I'll let the door hit you on the ass on the way out. You know, and then I thought, my God, what have I done? Now no one will have me, you know. And as soon as my hair grew out, I was back in Beverly Hills again. I found another one. This one was from Thief River Falls, Minnesota. I don't know where the class guys drink here. Forget Beverly Hills if you ever go there. This one was a beer drinker. This one was the worst kind. This one was one of those fat, sweaty beer drinkers. He was repulsive. I stayed married to him for 7 years. And you know what he did for 7 years? He sat and he sweat at me. And he sat in his underwear. And he didn't have underwear like I'm sure most of you have with those cute little tushes I've seen around here this weekend. Uh-uh. He had those big suckers with the hots on them, you know? For those of you that don't understand my New England accent, do like this for me. Hot. 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 Got it. Hot. They would, I know how big they were because I was washing them. I mean, I just have to pick them up with tongs, you know. And for 7 years, this little fat, sweaty beer drinker sat in those underwear, sucking on a can of Budweiser in front of a TV, and he giggled at cartoons. For 7 years. I mean, try to imagine. I want to go to the party. And he's sitting there going, hee, 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 hee. He's having a party, you know. And my keen alcoholic mind went to work. And I thought, maybe we had a baby, everything would be all right. And I don't remember whether we had a blackout in L.A. or a commercial came on or what, but I got pregnant, you know. And my son was born. And everything was not all right. Because the old boy was watching Yogi Bear that day. He loved Yogi Bear. He took one look at my son and named him Boo Boo. Now, my son is 19 years old. He's the absolute joy of my life. And he does not want to be called Boo Boo anymore. The old beer drinker called just a couple of weeks ago because they see each other once a week for a 20-minute breakfast, which consists of Budweiser for him and eggs for my son. And he said to me, hi-ho. And then he introduced himself. This is Dadums. I said, I didn't think it was one of my babies. He said, is Boo Boo ready for Rez Dindon? This is the same man that is very grateful that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because he says I'm a bad drunk. I agree with him. I'm a bad drunk. I'm going to tell you, you know the pitiful and incomprehensible, demoralizing part of this story? I stayed with him because I was afraid no one else would have me. That's what I'd been reduced to, you know. I can laugh about it today. I can laugh about this whole story today. I can laugh about everything that happened in my life because you taught me how to laugh at myself. And you laugh with me. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. Alcoholics Anonymous has laughter in it, and laughter heals. And I hope we never forget that. I love to laugh in AA. I don't want to be in a depression anymore. I know it's chic to be in a depression. But I don't want to. You know, I've cried all the tears I'm ever going to cry. The only time I cry is when I cried last night when I saw you people get up and take your chips and take your birthdays. And I saw how strong and proud every one of you marched up here. And you had your heads held high and you were proud to be members and you were delighted to be sober. That's when I cry anymore. Not over this stupid story that I'm telling you tonight. It was hell when I was living it. You know, but I don't want to have to live it again, so we've learned to laugh about it. Anyway, during all this, we couldn't go to the party anymore. So I had to stay home and drink at home. And I don't like to drink at home because there's no one there but me and the cartoon watcher. And I was lonesome, so I told him, no one ever comes here. I'm lonesome. And he wasn't all bad. He went out and got me a big white rabbit. So I wouldn't have to drink alone. And Bugs Bunny is what he named him, by the way. Isn't that clever? And I told Bugs that when I drink, everybody drinks. And I also told Bugs that we couldn't drink vodka anymore because it didn't leave us breathless. And we didn't want to drink scotch, that we were going to drink a little wine. And, you know, I like to dress for the occasion. Tonight I feel like a flapper, you know. When I go to the beach, it's in a bathing suit. I'm very into clothes, you know. I just love clothes and looking good. I love it, you know. And when I drink at home, I like to drink for the occasion, and so I had a drinking robe. You must have a drinking robe. Mine was orange terry cloth that had a zipper that went up the front. It didn't work, but it didn't matter. My liver held it out. And I got Bugs a little dish so he could drink his wine out of, and I got a crystal glass because I am a lady, which I iced. And I don't know if you've ever had it here in Dallas, but we had a wonderful vintage that we drank for 2 years. It was 72 cents a quart, and it was called Red Ripple. We went through about 4 quarts a night because that Bugs really drank, you know. I was busy. I taught Bugs how to do his doo-doos in a box. I got I haven't used one bad word, but he has trouble with doo-doos, doesn't he? I'm gonna get him yet. Okay. My drinking robe, you know, I love to throw up. I don't know about the rest of you. But I threw up for 20 years. I think I threw up for 90 days of sobriety. I was so into it, you know. And I know the proper way of throwing up. We all know how to throw up with class. We all know that you go into the bathroom, you lay on the coal tile, you put your arms lovingly around the toilet. You get real close so that nothing splashes. And then you get as spiritual as you were ever going to get until you get to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you say, oh God. And then if you're anything like me, on the way up you make promises. And they go like this. Oh, God, if you'll just let me stop puking, I'll never drink again. You know, straight people have problems, too. My other prayer was, oh, God, if you'll just let me have my period, I'll never do that again. God kept his bargain, I didn't. But by this time, I didn't do that anymore. I mean, if I wanted to heave, I just, wherever I was, let it go. You know what I mean? So I had a little of this splashed on the front of the robe, you know. It went lovely with the orange. And I got some in my slippers, which made you a bit squishy. I didn't comb my hair anymore because there was almost always too much vomit in it, you know. And I didn't put makeup on. I was afraid I'd blind myself. And, you know, I've always smoked like this, and so when I drank, I smoked, and sometimes I'd get exhausted talking to the rabbit, watching television, throwing up, and I'd take a little nappy. We had a few cigarette burns on the wall. I'd like to ask, is there anyone in this room who has ever drank Ripple? Would you raise your hand if you've had any Ripple? Oh, I'm so glad. I'm going to start my own specialty group. This is going to be Ripple Anonymous. And you can only be a red Ripple drinker. It's very special. And the only way that you can qualify, now raise your hands and be honest, you're all among friends. The only ones that can come to my group have to have had the Ripple runs. Would you raise your hand? Oh, good. We're going to have a Dallas chapter. Isn't that the best fun? The decisions are taken out of your hands. So we had a little of this on the back of the robe, you know. I want you to try this one. I shit my pants. Is never going to sell. We need him, you know. Oh, God. And some idiot said to me on the phone one day, have you ever thought about stopping drinking? I hadn't. I had thought about, I planned my husband's death. I just knew if I get rid of him, everything would be all right. I tried to get my daughter to quit running away from me because she was a teenager, and it just wasn't fun to bring friends home and watch mommy pass out in the soup. My son was a baby and he kept going to sleep, and I had no one to talk to, and Bugs was so tired of my story. I worked every day, by the way. Those of you who are in the same business can appreciate this. I'm in the accounting field, and you try putting those goddamn little numbers in those little squares. And then they expect them to all add up to something. You know? It wasn't easy. I had a black dress and a gray dress left. That's what went to work, and home to the drinking robe. Who needed a big wardrobe, you know? Anyway, this man took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went there drunk. How else could you face all these people? There hadn't been any crowd in my living room. At the coffee break, they all dashed to the back of the room. I thought they were getting drugs. I got real nervous with all these people around and needed a pill. So I opened my little bottle of pills, and it flew out of my hands under the feet of all of those at the coffee pot. I went scrounging around between their ankles to get them, because that's all I had left. You know, I'd been trying to overdose for so long, I was down to practically nothing. You know how it is when you're down to 4 or 5 bottle of pills. But I didn't raise my hand because I didn't want them to know I was new. I smell new. I had that throw up hanging from my hair. I had my gray tent on that night. And I don't know anything anybody said there. But I know this. I heard the same thing I've heard tonight. I heard laughter in that room. Then I heard a real strange thing. And it was coming from somewhere deep down, and it was coming out of me. And I was laughing out loud. And it's the first time I had laughed out loud in many, many years, and that's what attracted me to Alcoholics Anonymous, was your laughter. You know, and that's the magic that stays with me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not stay in Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't identify with anyone. They told me the women stayed with the women and the men stayed with the men, and I said, why? And they explained, because the men will pat your ass and the women will save your ass. And I said, I didn't come here to be saved. Then they tried to get me to listen to these women, and they took me to meetings where they had blue-haired ladies with needlepoint in their hands, and they talked about sipping a little sherry and burning the toast and coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and their life was marvelous. And I thought, my God, I don't belong there. Then they tried another tact with me. They took me downtown Los Angeles to the Midnight Mission and Skid Row. And down there, a woman got to the podium. And she said, fellas, I sell my body for a six-pack. And I thought, how tacky. And I said, at least I never sold my body. And I can tell you, standing here tonight, 47 years later, to this night, I have never sold my body. No one has ever offered me cash. I didn't know I was going to meet someone like Marie that got $10 for her. Every time she says that, she looks so sad, and I think how lucky she was. I mean, a couple of the girls that I sponsor try to tell me they got $100. I said, how long do you have to stay? A week? I was at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, just about to give up, and the door flew open, and this black lady marched into the room, and she dragged her mink coat behind her, and she threw it on the chair, and she had on a silk dress and high heels, a brace on her leg, but they were covered with nylon stockings, you know, and she got to the podium, and she put her hands like this so you could see her diamonds, and she said, wear your sobriety. Oh. And then she backed up a little bit, she struck a pose, she put her hand on her hips, looked around, and she said, shit. And I said, she has what I want. That old broad had a mink coat and a lot of diamonds and a silk dress and a dirty mouth, and I was home. And she got up to the podium and she started telling these stories. You know, my God, she only got $2. That's a long night. Then she said she came to Alcoholics Anonymous. She went back to school. She was 19 years sober when she died, my wonderful, wonderful Marion. And she was a probation officer. And she said, and I thought she was talking just to me, and there was a room full of people like this, but I thought she meant just me, I don't do that anymore. And I promise you, you don't ever have to drink again. You don't ever have to use again. You don't ever have to be lonely again. You don't ever have to behave that way again. And I believed her, because she stood there with dignity. She stood there looking like she didn't do that anymore.
you know. And I explained to Marion how I couldn't relate to the women in Alcoholics Anonymous like her. And I said, Marion, when I'm with you in a meeting, would you leave out the $2 part, you know? And I said to her, you see, I've never done that, and so I don't relate to that. And she said, what did you do? I said, so I went to a few bars. And she said, what'd you do there? I said, so I talked to some men. And she said, did you leave with them? I said, well, sometimes the bartender would insist because I had my tongue in their ear or my hands in their pants or something, you know. And he would suggest, you know, that we took it somewhere else. And she said, well, did he pick up your bar tab? And I said, yes. And she said, how much was it? I said, about $8. She said, then don't you feel you sold yourself for $8? I said, no, Marion. She said, then why did you go home with him? I said, because I loved him. And Marion said, what was his name? And I said, honey. And Marion explained to me that I was not ever to judge another woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was sober for 4 months, and I was standing at a coffee pot, and this guy fell in from Skid Row. He had 6 teeth, rotten. He had no hair, and he had what we called a Jake leg. That's alcoholic neuritis. It's from drinking too much cheap white port on Skid Row. And he smiled at me with those 6 teeth. And he said to me, how you doing? And I knew the answer was fine, because I've watched you people do it, you know. But then I'd watch this for 4 months. The next thing you say is, do you want to go for coffee? They don't even buy you coffee. They ask you, do you want to go for coffee? That's meet them at the coffee shop, stick in a booth with 12 other people. They totally ignore you, meet you back outside, and then say, we'll go home and talk about the steps. I'd watch this go on for 3 days with some people. The girls think they're having a relationship. Anything past a coffee break is a relationship here, isn't it? And then they see him at a meeting. And he says, oh, I've been talking to my sponsor. He says, I have to get into the books tomorrow. I'm not ready for a commitment. See you around. And then you see him talking to your best friend, who's not sober as long as you, or as attractive as you, or as bright as you. And you know what he's saying to her? You want to go for coffee? And you can't go to that meeting anymore, because you know he's told his sponsor you're easy. And before you know it, you get drunk, because you can't go to any more meetings. So this old bald guy said to me, how you doing? I said, none of your goddamn business. Months later, we were married. I've been married to this old boy 12 years, which is the longest I've ever been married to all of them. You know, I'm just tired at this point. He asked me if I wanted to go to a Tascadero. I thought it was a nightclub. I just wanted to get out of these goddamn AA meetings, you know. It turned out to be a men's prison. And I did my first night's institutional work. And for the last 13 years, including the night before I came here, I took a panel into one of the women's prisons. And I go to the men's prisons. And I go to the hospitals and the jails. And I have never been in any of those places drinking. But I don't want to ever have to go into them unless the door is closing behind me when I leave. And the way that I think I can stay sober, one of the ways I can give back to Alcoholics Anonymous what it has so freely given me, and I can never make it up, is to go into these places and try to carry the message to these people so they know where to go when they come out. And some of them do call, and some of them do get sober, and some of them die, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous has been real good to me, real good to me. My daughter is one of my best friends today. I had Mother's Day brunch with my daughter, my two granddaughters. My 14-year-old granddaughter ruined my Mother's Day. She invited me to a junior high school graduation. I don't believe it, you know. My son was there, my husband was there, my phone rang several times that day with people just saying, Happy Mother's Day. You know, that's what I got from Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was sober for 10 years, the doctor took a little test, and he said to me, Patty, I'm sorry, it's malignant. And so I had to go to the hospital because that's where you go. I mention this because people are afraid of the word cancer. I'm not afraid of it. I've survived it. And I mention this because if you see anything that you don't like, you go immediately because time is of the essence and I want to share that with you. And he put me in the hospital. And what happened to me is what happens to any member of Alcoholics Anonymous that has ever had anything done in a hospital. The AAs overflowed the room. There was so much smoke, the nurses couldn't find me, you know? They went 4.5 inches into my back and they cut that out of me, you know. And I came to surrounded by flowers and surrounded by laughter, and they were jumping on my bed and they were eating my food and they were stealing my candy. My God, they took my flowers, you know. They had a wonderful meeting, you know. And do you know that I was out of that hospital 3 days later, and 2 days after that I was standing at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous? Because that's how we heal, if we want to heal, if we don't give up. I didn't come this far to let this life go. You know, I want to live today, and I want to be sober today, and I want to do a lot more in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have so much fun here. I love what you've given me, and I want you to keep giving it to me. Tomorrow night, I'm going to be back in Los Angeles, and I'm going to be at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, listening to one of you tell me your experience, strength, and hope, because I need you more than ever. I went to 7 meetings a week my first year of sobriety. I went to 7 meetings a week this year. I need to take back from you. I need to hear what you've got to tell me. I'd like to close with a prayer that a man brought me in an institution that he had been in, and he got sober and he came back and he brought me this prayer, and I had it printed up into cards, and if any of you would like it, I'd be happy to give it to you. And this is what he said. I appear to be to him, and this is what I think Alcoholics Anonymous is. The prayer says, please, Lord, teach us to laugh again, but God, don't ever let us forget that we cried. I hope each and every one of you stay. I hope you're all here next year and the next year and the next year, and I thank you with all my heart for my sobriety. I'm going to ask you to do something, and I hope I can get this right. We've talked about this. No one wanted to do it, and so I got naturally chosen, and I hope I can get this right. We're going to have a count up. We'd like everyone to... No, we're not. What?
Lights.
Oh, we're going to have lights. There's a portion in the book that describes Jack. It talks about being the director and setting the stage. Okay, we're gonna.
Don't take it back.
Thank God he told me I was going on Greyhound. Would all the sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, let's see, how do we do this, Jack? I'm gonna mess it up. That are sober tonight. Let's all stand that are sober tonight. Okay, and give yourselves a hand, right? Okay, now hold your applause. We're going to ask everyone who is in their first 30 days of sobriety to to sit down. Now we're going to ask everyone in their first 90 days of sobriety to sit down. Everyone in their first 6 months, 9 months, their first year, 1 to 2 years, 2 to 3, 2 to 5 years. Well, how about 2 to 3 years? Yeah, okay. 3 to 4. 4 to 5. 5 to 6. 6 to 7. 7 to 8. 8 to 9. 9 to 10. 10 to 11. That's including the 11th year. 11 to 12. 11 to 12. 12 to 13. 13 to 14. 14 to 15. 16. 17. 18. 19. 20. 21. 22.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. That man has 26 years.
If you haven't, everyone get his phone number and call him tonight. He knows how to do it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Patty. Really enjoying it. At this time, I would like for Ron Jay to come forward and read Why We Were Chosen, and there are copies of that that are going to be available on your way out tonight at the door. So, Ron?
I had first seen this... Why We Were Chosen about 2.5 years ago at the Castle Group here in Dallas. I haven't seen it too many places since then. The first time I saw it, I tried to get a copy of it, and I called Central Office, and Joe did the best she could to get me a copy, which it then was just a small pocket size. So we felt it was a kind of a nice gesture to have it redone, put on 8.5 by 11, and give it to those that choose to have it tonight. Why We Were Chosen. God in His wisdom selected this group of men and women to be the purveyors of His goodness. In selecting those to bring about this phenomenon, He went not to the proud, the mighty, the famous, nor the brilliant. He went instead to the humble, the unfortunate. He went to the drunkard, the so-called weakling of the world. He might well have said to us, "Unto your weak and feeble hands I have entrusted a power beyond estimate. To you has been given that which has been denied the most learned of your fellows. Not to scientists, not to wives nor mothers, not even to my priests or ministers have I given this gift of healing other alcoholics, which I entrust to you. It must be used unselfishly. It carries with it grave responsibility. No day can be too long, no effort too great. It must be used with tolerance, for I have restricted its application to no race, no creed, and no denomination. Personal criticism you must expect. Lack of appreciation will be common. Ridicule will be your lot. Your motives will be misjudged. You must be prepared for adversity, for For what men call adversity is the ladder you must ascend, rung by rung, towards spiritual perfection. And remember, in the exercise of this power, I shall not exact from you beyond your capabilities. You are not selected because of your exceptional talents. Be careful always, if success attends your efforts, not to ascribe to personal superiority that to which you can lay claim only by the virtue of my gift. If I had wanted learned men to accomplish this mission, the power would have been entrusted to the physician and scientist. If I had wanted eloquent men, there would have been many anxious for the assignment, for talk is the easiest used of all the talents which I have endowed mankind. If I had wanted scholarly men, the world is filled with better qualified men than you who would be available. You were selected because you have been the outcast of the world, and your experience at Drunkard's has made, or should make, you humbly alert to the cries of distress that come from the lonely hearts of alcoholics everywhere. Keep ever in mind the admission you made on the day of your profession in Alcoholics Anonymous, that you are powerless, and that it was only with your willingness to turn your life and will unto my keeping that relief came to you. Thank you.
I'm David, and I'm an alcoholic. Sobriety date, September 8th of 1980. Shorter announcement list tonight. First of all, I want to remind everybody that we close with a spiritual meeting at 10 o'clock in the morning, and that's open to everybody. It'll be in the North Ballroom.
If there are no further announcements, may we stand and close in the usual manner. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us of our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works.
For additional copies of this recording, please contact B&B Tapes at area code 972-317-1020. That's 972-317-1020. Or write B&B Tapes, Post Office Box 1250, Louisville, Texas 75067. Thank you.